Hi, I'm Jill, and with me is my colleague Carlos. Welcome to Module 4, Communication, the last unit in this patient relations course for Alberta speech-language pathologists and audiologists.
Hi, Jill. So, what are the topics for this last unit?
Well, we'll begin by explaining the purpose and importance of effective communication. We'll then provide some information on relevant college standards. These standards are patient-centered professional services, communication, informed consent, and privacy and confidentiality. Finally, we'll discuss therapeutic communication, caring communication, and overcoming language barriers. I would like to point out to SLPs and audiologists that many of the techniques and strategies that we will be discussing can be effectively applied to other interactions, such as with clients, family members, colleagues, students, and other professionals.
Well, sounds like some interesting stuff.
It is.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's begin by describing the ways that SLPs and audiologists use communication in their daily practice. Now, Carlos, you start.
Sure. The SLP or audiologist has to communicate to welcome and seat a patient and make sure that the patient is comfortable, informed, and relaxed.
The SLP or audiologist has to effectively communicate to gather accurate data about the medical and health history of the patient and obtain information about any symptoms, problems, and complaints.
The SLP or audiologist always lets the patient know what's happening during the appointment and obtains informed consent.
The SLP or audiologist communicates to work effectively with colleagues, staff, and other regulated health professionals.
The SLP or audiologist keeps the patient informed during the appointment, instructs the patient to facilitate the examination and treatment process, and constantly checks to ensure that the patient is okay.
And finally, the SLP or audiologist uses communication to provide post-treatment instructions and education to the patient.
So, Jill, it's quite obvious that communication is an important component of the work that speech-language pathologists and audiologists do.
Absolutely. Let's now briefly mention the importance of effective communication in speech-language pathology and audiology practice. The first is increased patient satisfaction. There's evidence demonstrating a positive association between a patient's satisfaction with the care they receive and their provider's ability and willingness to communicate and empathize with them.
Another benefit of good communication is reduced complaints. Open dialogue with patients results in better patient retention and a reduction of complaints. There are some estimates that 80% of complaints made by patients could have been resolved through better communication by the practitioners.
And the last reason for good communication is that it results in improved efficiency. Improved communication with patients will make the practice more efficient. For example, giving patients time to express their concerns doesn't take any longer, but can significantly reduce the likelihood of late arising problems and/or missed opportunities to gather important data. It isn't a coincidence that the first standard in the college's standards of practice has to do with putting a focus and priority on the patient. Standard 1.1 states that a regulated member of ACSLPA uses a patient-centered approach in the competent provision of safe and ethical professional services.
To adhere to this standard, a regulated member must do several things. First, the regulated member must involve the patient in decision-making and incorporate the patient's needs and goals into the service plan.
The regulated member must adapt their communication strategies to facilitate the patient's understanding of assessment and intervention.
SLPs and audiologists must obtain the patient's informed consent to proposed assessment and intervention plans, recognizing the right of the patient to refuse service or withdraw consent at any time.
The regulated member must monitor the patient's responses to assessment and intervention procedures and address any issues or concerns as appropriate.
And finally, SLPs and audiologists must treat all patients with compassion, dignity, sensitivity, and respect. Respect means refraining from all types of discrimination, harassment, or bullying behaviors, including verbal, body language, social media, and any other harmful type of communications with patients, colleagues, and the public.
Standard 1.4, Communication says that a regulated member of AXLPA communicates respectfully, effectively, and in a timely manner in the provision of professional services.
To comply with this standard, the regulated member must communicate effectively and clearly, incorporating plain language into all forms of communication such as spoken, written, and electronic.
SLPs and audiologists must select appropriate communication techniques, adapting communication style and minimizing barriers by incorporating any required supports, such as use of interpreters, technological devices, or written cues.
The regulated member must encourage the patient's understanding of proposed services by using active listening and facilitating open, two-way communication.
SLPs and audiologists must document clearly, professionally, and in a timely manner in all forms of written communication.
And lastly, a regulated member must disseminate written reports as appropriate to relevant stakeholders while respecting relevant privacy legislation and consent requirements. Standard 3.2, Informed Consent, states that a regulated member of AXLPA ensures that he or she obtains informed consent prior to the provision of professional services.
To do this, a regulated member must inform patients of the risks, benefits, and alternative options of any proposed service plans initially, and whenever there are changes to the services provided.
SLPs and audiologists must assess the patient's understanding of the proposed professional services and adapt communication accordingly.
The regulated member must obtain informed consent from the patient or from a legally authorized representative. If consent is verbal, then a notation must be made to that effect in the patient's file.
And the last requirement for informed consent is that the regulated member must respect the patient's right to choose service options, refuse interventions, and withdraw consent at any time.
The last relevant standard that we're going to describe is the one related to privacy and confidentiality. Standard 3.1 states that a regulated member of AXLPA respects the patient's right to privacy and confidentiality of information and practices in compliance with relevant legislation and regulations.
To demonstrate this standard, the regulated member must comply with all relevant privacy legislation, such as the Health Information Act, the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act, and the Personal Information Protection Act.
Regulated members must maintain an environment and engage in practices that protects the privacy and confidentiality of patient information in all contexts of service delivery, such as collection, storage, use, disclosure, and destruction of records.
An SLP or audiologist must access information and archival systems only as required for the provision of professional services.
And the final requirement is to minimize any risks to privacy and confidentiality of patient information when transporting or transferring patient records from one location or medium to another. Here are some additional suggestions specifically related to therapeutic communications. Most of these have already been mentioned, so this is mostly a review. It should be obvious, but introduce yourself to the patient. This is the first step in establishing a therapeutic relationship.
A therapeutic relationship has to work both ways, so always give the patient an opportunity to express themselves and to be fully informed participants in their healthcare.
It's important to remind the patient that their personal and health information is confidential and protected by legislation. This may make them more willing and comfortable to share data that is critical to effective diagnosis, treatment, and monitoring of their healthcare.
As I indicated before, each patient is a unique individual. Therefore, to establish an effective therapeutic relationship, the SLP or audiologist must be aware of their own communication style. They must modify this communication style to suit each unique patient with whom they are working. Factors such as age, culture, language ability, mental or physical disabilities all have to be taken into account when communicating with a patient.
Because everyone is different, it's important to remember that we need to understand, acknowledge, and respect each patient's beliefs and values. Sometimes this may be difficult to do, especially if their beliefs and values differ significantly from ours.
And our final suggestion is to engage the patient in education. The more the patient knows about what they have to do to maintain and improve their health, the easier it becomes for you to do your job.
We've already mentioned several times how important caring and empathy is in establishing an effective therapeutic relationship with patients. One way of demonstrating empathy is by carefully selecting the words we use. Here are some specific examples.
Yeah, use the I messages. For example, I am concerned that you've noticed that your hearing is getting worse.
Be specific. I see a cut on your neck. How did you get it?
Be sensitive to others' feelings. For example, I understand how difficult it may be to talk about your past experiences with examinations.
Always be non-judgmental and non-threatening. Say something like, "Would you like to talk about it?"
Empower rather than rescue. For example, you can say, "Do you want me to suggest some resources?" rather than, "I have some resources for you."
Yeah, and don't rush. Allow patients to make their own decisions in their own time. Provide the necessary information. Answer questions, but allow them to make the decisions. Our final discussion is what to do when dealing with the patient who is not fluent in your language. The first suggestion is to speak slowly and distinctly in a normal tone. Do not shout. Increasing volume does not increase understanding.
Use gestures or pictures to show meaning. It might be useful to have pictures made up and be available for these types of patients. Another useful tip is to avoid cliches, jargon, or value-laden terms. Skip the medical and technical terms and explain things in simple, plain English.
When trying to communicate with someone who speaks another language, we sometimes become impatient and frustrated. You have to be careful to avoid defensive or offensive body language in these situations. If the patient detects this nonverbal language, they may become defensive and uncommunicative.
Always obtain feedback from the patient to confirm that they've understood what you're telling them. If a significant number of patients come from a specific language group, then it may be appropriate to get some informative brochures made in that language.
As a last resort, use an interpreter. However, it's important that the interpreter is both culturally sensitive and understands speech-language pathology or audiology terminology. Always speak to the patient, not the interpreter. Well, that brings us to the end of this unit on communication. Carlos, would you mind summarizing what we covered in this last unit?
Sure thing, Jill. We began by discussing the many ways that SLPs and audiologists use communication in their daily practice. We then described that by being effective communicators, AXLP members will increase patient satisfaction, reduce patient complaints, and improve the efficiency of their practices. The college's standards of practice related to communication were reviewed. These included patient-centered service, communication, informed consent, and privacy and confidentiality. We explained ways that SLPs and audiologists can use communication to develop and maintain a therapeutic relationship with their patients. We provided some specific examples of words to use to demonstrate caring and empathy with patients. And lastly, we gave some very specific suggestions on how to communicate with patients who speak other languages. I think I got everything there, Jill.
You sure did, Carlos. You summarized all the important points. And as this is the last module in this course, Carlos and I would like to thank you for listening to us as we discussed the various topics related to patient relations. We hope that the information we presented with allow you to comply with the new legislation and help you work more effectively with patients. Goodbye for now.
Yes, thanks, and goodbye from me as well.